Tech of Sports, episode 3 for March 21st, 2012. Jim Kovach. This week on the Tech of Sports, Jim Kovach, COO of CrowdOptic. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. And don't forget the Stitcher radio app for all iOS devices, Android, BlackBerry, and Palm. Get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. Stitcher Radio, award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. The Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. You can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific Time at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room and listen to the show live. This is Rick, and welcome to the show tonight, where we have a very special guest, and we're going to talk a little tech tonight and how it relates in the app space to sports and what's going on maybe a little bit with your mobile phones. Since it was just a little over 10 years ago when we started using our mobile phones for more than just making calls, we started sending text messages, then we started checking and sending email. Now we have apps on our phones that let us do everything from keeping track of our kids and bank accounts to editing videos and downloading the latest song that we just heard on the radio. In the world of sports, we keep track of our favorite team scores and stats in real time, and we can even watch live streaming action like we're doing this month with March Madness. Today, we aren't the only ones using our smartphones, though. Some companies are now taking what we aim our cell phones at and the information we type into our phones to make decisions and monitor the world we live in. One of these companies, a San Francisco-based company called CrowdOptic, they've developed a mobile analytics and advertising and communication platform for live events. This is the next generation of location-based services. They have a proprietary technology that allows the enterprise to monitor the crowd's focus in real time. For fans, this can enhance their experience at a live sporting event or concert. For the event, it can help eliminate safety concerns. And for sponsors, it's another way of getting their brand and message out to the public. That brings us to our special guest this evening, Dr. Jim Kovach, as a former football player at All-American linebacker at the University of Kentucky. He graduated in 1978, if he doesn't mind me telling you that, where he was the University of Kentucky most outstanding athlete across all sports in 1976 and 1978. And if you're not familiar with Kentucky, that was at a time when Kentucky basketball featured players like Jack Goose Givens and Rick Roby and Kyle Macy. More importantly, probably to him, is he was an all-academic and athlete, all-SEC, and he remains the leading tackler in Kentucky football history. He took those stats, and he went on to play in the NFL for almost a decade with the New Orleans Saints and the San Francisco 49ers, where he earned all-NFC middle linebacker in 1983. He was the team MVP of the Saints that same year. While he was still playing in the NFL, actually, he attended medical school and earned a medical degree with distinction in 1984. If that wasn't enough, he earned a law degree from Stanford in 1990. And since then, he's worked with companies and organizations in a legal, medical research, and technology leadership capacity, including being the co-founder of Athletic Code, which helped athletes improve performance and reduce injuries through genetics and data analysis. In 2010, he was elected to the NCAA Academic All-America Hall of Fame. He's now COO of CrowdOptic, and they're doing some exciting things and that we're benefiting from now, even though you might not know it. And I think there's even more to come in the future. And Jim, I'd like to welcome you, and thanks for being on tonight.
Well, thanks, Rick. That was very gracious of you to go through, bringing back memories of the old days and in the 70s at Kentucky. We had some great teams back then.
I think about the only thing you haven't done is walk on the moon. Is that in the near future for you?
No, I think because of playing, the osteoarthritis I have is going to prevent me from being a member of the space team there.
So. Well, I guess you won't be able to check that one off, but a lot otherwise other than that. I'd like to talk a little about CrowdOptic and what you're doing there and what's maybe going on with the average person on the street smartphone that you guys are working on.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll give a little bit more context to that good overview you provided.
Sure.
In terms of how one can take technologies that are in the phone, right? So compass, accelerometers, GPS, And what we did is design algorithms that through an app, it's more of a analytics platform, but we use an app, we use the camera to sense lines of sight. So using a principle, a mathematic principle of triangulation, you can actually identify in a group of people who are using the phone and using the app, the intersection of their lines of sight, and therefore you can identify areas of interest. We call them clusters, is when you're in a crowd and you're focusing on an athlete, a billboard, some action on the field is something that we can identify the members of that and then associate that with information about that athlete dynamically. So that's why we call it focused social media. It uses some of the things of land location-based services, but it really kind of identifies the common denominators of what people are looking at a particular moment in an event, or there are other applications beyond sports as well.
It's mainly useful at events. I don't think at least right now, a person walking down the street can't aim their, or wouldn't be able to aim their cell phone at a flower shop and find out what the price of roses is without going in the shop. Is that correct?
Well, there are location-based services like Monocle that have a purpose of looking at a particular shop. But one can define event in a kind of a broad fashion. I go down to the Ferry Building in San Francisco all the time. There are people all over the place. You know, you look at, we're at the Oscars. That's an event, but you have pockets of people. You have actors and actresses coming up and getting on the carpet. So we started with sporting events, but there are many applications, and one can be a little bit more provocative in terms of what is an event. It's an event is any gathering of people where they're interested in different things, and again, the concept of sharing discussion, starting discussion pages, not so much initially with your Facebook friends, that we do allow one to start a discussion page, but it's based on what people are looking at. They can be anywhere. It can be America's Cup and looking at the same boat. So we've actually been, we started with, you know, the kind of traditional event where you have four, you know, it's a box and you have people around that. But we've actually done a lot of brainstorming and had some good experiences in some of these other kinds of events as well.
Yeah, as it relates to sports, it's a pretty easy sell. I mean, people at the sporting events all bring their cell phones to the event, and actually I saw it in live use last summer at a tennis tournament there in Northern California, and I mean it's pretty slick how it works, and the information it gives out is fantastic. I mean, just by aiming the phone at a particular player or at something on the court of play. I mean, the possibilities are endless for it when it relates to sports, isn't it?
I think they are. I think that the goal is to enhance the experience at the event. We've seen with technology development, especially perhaps in television, media, spectacular in-home experience that people have. We're at the event, we're at a football game, and they have a timeout so that they can even make that better at the home, right, through advertising. And so a lot of event owners, leagues, teams are saying, hey, we got to make this interesting and fun, engaging at the event. And so it's allowed us to be very creative, starting, as I'd indicated, with information. I think you're at the Bank of the West tennis tournament where you had tennis players, and so throughout the match, you can update statistics and provide probabilities of second service defaults and things like that. Advertisers, someone wins the event, and you can immediately have a call to action to come to the next game. So it's useful information to the fan itself. And we've been having just a great time going out to different sports. And most of it, I would say, is the same set of features. But it is interesting to see every event, every location sport has something that it wants to focus on a little bit more. So we've had a chance to work individually with the different sports.
And I would think sponsors probably would be on board with it as well, since they pay, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars to sponsor and run these events. I would have a feeling that getting their message out additionally through a mobile device like that would appeal to them as well.
Yes, it's such an interesting time. We were just talking with our friends at Ogilvy, the one of the world's leading advertising agencies, and their clients are very, very much into leveraging the mobile experience. It's still a little bit early, so we're basically starting to have these conversations and figuring out how one can feed in, make the experience better for the fan. But you don't want to just be hitting people over the head with ads. So what we will do with the crowd optic technology is use this common denominator. Again, you can start a discussion page. So people are looking at Maria Sharapova at the event, say. We're doing work with Infineon. You could be working at looking at Jeff Gordon's pit, and you want to start a discussion on this. So people launch that. And there are ways to make it fun, engaging, and you could imagine there being sponsorships of that conversation. So that way, you're leveraging that good feel, that connection that the fans are receiving, not just hitting people over the head with an ad. So that's one of the directions we think is going to go, scavenger hunts and games and things like that, within the framework of timeouts. So you don't want to distract people, but I think there's going to be a really nice dovetail to make that event, that live experience, informative, fun, and engaging.
Yeah, correct. From what I've seen, it really covers all the bases from a fan's perspective, and the event, the people at the event all seem to be positive about it. There is kind of a back end to it as well with the information you're gathering, and that's maybe where the term analytics comes in.
Yeah, so analytics, you're right. There's a lot of every second will the servers hit by all these phones that are registering information about what people are looking at. Not only, it's more in the aggregate. So what is the crowd focused on? What are shifts in crowd attention? Where do they move to? What are they interested at different times in an event? If it's a football game, first quarter versus second versus halftime. So we're able to identify that, and that goes into from the phone to a cloud server. Then it can be two-way communication as well, so it could go back out to the phones. But just analyzing that data really allows our customers to get information about what their crowd is interested in, but to correlate that very closely with things that are actually happening, so they can experiment with new tactics to try to basically move crowds' attentions to things that the event would like them to be focusing on at any particular time.
That's really information that event organizers and promoters never had before.
It definitely is. We've talked to leagues and teams in football, for example, my sport, right? So I've had a good opportunity to reach out, and there the advertisers measure their throughput, their bandwidth, so to speak, on frames. They do a lot of frame counting, right? So the implication is, if Coca-Cola is in a frame, in a three-hour football telecast of, 2 minutes and 35 seconds, that has X value, right? Here, it's in the event. One can make those same sort of extrapolations. You don't need anywhere close to everyone having the app. I mean, you could have everyone having the app, but if you don't, you still can make inferences about what the collective is by essentially the analogy would be the Nielsen's, right? So if 10% of the people have the app, then you basically see what they're focusing on, what ads attract their interest at what time. If Coke has three different ads, which is the most popular to see? All those sort of things have never been able to be done. We think that that'll correlate with giving better information to sponsors, advertisers, and venues about the kinds of ads. And then there's the concept we have of hyper-targeting. You could imagine even small players coming in and for a five-second period of time posting an ad in an area that they know to be hot at a particular time in a hot location.
Yeah, and the sample sizes you get of the people are pretty substantial. A football game gets, say, 100,000 people, if you get 10% of the people using that, that's a sample size that people have never been able to get before at an event like that.
No, definitely. And to use that then for extrapolation purposes, and, you know, we're in our first year of rollout of the product, but one could imagine the sophistication. You have the same event, football team plays the same time, and we're 10 to, you know, 12 times per year in that stadium, and then throughout stadiums. So you'll be able, we certainly will build up a large database that is very robust. So that all goes to the concept of analytics, and really kind of the core of the company is not the app. I mean, we have talked with others about, you know, at the enterprise level of bolting on, we call it, or through APIs, essentially making our analytics available through other apps. And so you just need to be able to use the camera like people have, and you're good to go.
Yeah, that's great. I know from previous conversations with you and other members there at the CrowdOptic team, you guys hear from event organizers and the people that run big shows that safety is always their number one concern and job number one at their events. Would the app or the technology be able to help in a situation maybe like the Sugarland concert at the Indiana State Fair last summer, maybe give a weather warning to the people on their phones, or if people are pointing their phones at like maybe a fight in the stands or a riot that gets out of control, that would alert security or to handle the situation?
No, that's a great question. That occurred to us for the first time, really, when we were talking with some of my colleagues and friends in the NFL. As you know, periodically, major league sports have major issues on security. And to your point, it is the number one priority of a venue and a team in a league. And it literally was a classic case of, could you use it for this? You know, so the idea of the shifts in crowds' attention and having someone point out that for fights, usually there's a long buildup to fights. Usually people look at them. The state of the art, I think, is texting now, but texting is cumbersome and you have to type. And a lot of times, you know, if you're at a 49ers game and you say someone in a 49ers jacket, that doesn't do anything. You know, picture's worth a thousand words. So they said, could you apply it in these situations outside the venue, in the venue? Could you give it to security personnel? And that actually has led to a separate effort in parallel. The product, like I said, has a lot of overlap, but many of these same principles in terms of empowering not only security personnel, but you could deputize fans. Again, you don't need everyone to have it, but to give power and authority back to fans to kind of reclaim. Something happens, either shift in attention to note to where the command and control note knows about that, or even taking a picture, sending it, allows, goes right to the command center that you could then use it to deploy people. And so the idea is 15 seconds. If you could make things quicker, 15, 30 seconds, you intervene ahead of time. Big outcome difference. And so we've actually spent a lot of time and are in parallel. You know, we have our venue enhancement, the fan enhancement. We're working on security as a separate line of business.
Yeah, and I think I've lost now how many events you've gone with the app live at. But has the written response been pretty positive on just about every turn that you guys have taken with it so far?
Yes, it's been. We're about 10 events now, and they do span sports. We've doing more and more in entertainment. We're doing more in essentially news almost. It's what by that I mean, you know, starting with the heritage of piping in specific information about an athlete. But what we've seen is this focused social media where you basically can go out. You don't have to be in a stadium. It's wherever a group is focused on the same thing. It could be an entertainer. It could be like the Oscars. And then you start, we have an invitation to enter or start a discussion. So you start commenting and posting, and then that can be sent out to Twitter and Facebook. So you have kind of your own focused social media conversation that you can keep going, but then launch that into the broader social networks. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I went to the Super Bowl, and we were asked by one of our clients to go to Super Bowl Village, and we were out there looking at the, you know, they had a hanging wire where they were sliding down. They had people, they had bands, they had people reveling, you know, hanging off balconies, and it was just so much fun to basically share comments and really. I really think that this element is really bursting onto the scene, this you know, instant social media or a focused social media that relies on what your interest is in. It's a authenticated kind of way of making sure that that the person who's there, you know, is able to share that moment right when it happens. So it's very fast as well.
Yeah, and with social media being so hot, were you into a corner to kind of integrate this with social media, or was that always part of your plan?
Yeah, we've definitely had discussions with how it could interface with some of the broader companies out here. The top five, we all know. It's something that would make sense for us. I mean, we like the aspect of how this really kind of allows one to authenticate, start a discussion, know that you're there. Say Twitter is one example. You get, you know, a deluge of data, which is great, but you're trying to find out as someone who's trying to get information about that event, who is actually there, what are they talking about, and this provides the basis for that. So it dovetails very nicely with the major social media perspectives of the largest companies.
Yeah, a lot of apps really are just about any app or having a social media component to them now. But that kind of brings up an issue when we talk about privacy and we put that out on the table. People are always concerned about that. I know you guys are aware of these issues and concerns. How do you go about easing fears at CrowdOptic with fans and people that run the events when you talk about your app or try to sell your app to them?
Yeah, we've talked about this, and one of the basic mechanisms that is important, I think, is some of the companies that have had problems, they basically engage the technology and then let you opt out, which I think is the wrong approach. Is basically you want to right up front say, hey, for us, it's like you're in a public venue, you're at an event. Is it okay to have your location? So it's an opt-in perspective. And then the other thing for us is to, you know, we emphasize, I think, and feel good about the fact that we're really, people are joining when they're in public forum. They're at an event and they want to share that event. So it's not the kind of technology that I've read about that basically tracks people, you know, in more private settings. These are all social events anyways that people want to get the word out. So I think that bodes in well for us, as well as you know, the opt-in aspect, I think, is important as well.
Yeah, what person doesn't want to tell their friend back home that they're at the Super Bowl?
Right, I think it doesn't personalize, so it's not like our discussion page is, would you like to join the page? It doesn't say anything like Jim Kovach is 20 yards away from you and you know, you're both reading the same book. I mean, so there's some technologies, you know, really, what is the technology do? What is its value? And for us, it's all about aggregated crowds. And so we don't identify other than a picture is an individual thing, but then you take that, you want to send this picture out, and people have the ability to do that. So it's an extra step that people take in order to do that. And it's in a crowd setting. So it's, yeah, it's one that our feedback has been uniformly positive. And I do think that it's because of the environment that the technology plays, which is a group setting where people are having fun, want to engage and share that.
Yeah, I think when you take that extra step, I think that gives you a little more credibility with people that maybe have that concern.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Great. Let's take a quick break here, and you can catch your breath for a second, Jim, or grab a sip of water while I do just a quick little mention for Amazon.com. If you're going to be doing any shopping in the coming months for Amazon, for maybe for Mother's Day or Father's Day, Netcast Studio has a link you can use, and it's no extra cost to you, and it helps support Netcast Studio and the great variety of shows that it offers. It's a quick link is netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And Amazon, of course, covers everything, carries everything under the sun. And I ran a quick little search on Amazon for your name, Jim, and you're talked about in a book called Where Football is King, A History of the SEC, and by Christopher Walsh. And that is readily available in stock on Amazon. And I've read actually part of it, and it really is good. And for people that don't live in the South, they don't know how football crazy this area is when it comes to college football. And just by reading that book, even if you don't live in this part of the country, it kind of gives you an idea of what people like to do on Saturdays in the fall. So you can order that book if you'd like at netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And Jim, if anyone else out there wanted to find out more information on CrowdOptic or if they have any questions, where would you direct them to go?
Yeah, I would go to our website. We have demos, nice descriptions of the product, www.crowdoptic, CROWDOPTIC, all one word, .com.
Yeah, it's a well laid out website and lots of testimonials on there and some of your media coverage and a lot of valuable information, and it's not really written too techy. So I would say your average person who uses a smartphone could get on there and understand it pretty well.
Well, good. That's how we try to design it. So I'm glad it's working.
Yeah, let me ask you one NFL question about your career before we go on with a couple more questions. I looked you up on NFLstats.com. And it said in 1985, you intercepted a pass and ran 53 yards with it. I got two questions about that. Question one is, who was the quarterback that you picked off? And question two is, if you returned it for 53 yards, why didn't you score?
That's a great question. It was Denver. It was actually the second game of the season, John Elway.
Wow.
And so the two reasons that I didn't return it all the way.
You're not going to throw out the altitude, are you?
Yes, the altitude.
Come on.
But probably more importantly is John Elway was really fast, a lot faster than me, that's for sure.
You got tracked down by John Elway?
John Elway got me, and he did the old dive into the legs, and that was it. I got down to about the 13, so they had actually gotten close to a score. But
did you hear about it from your teammates in the locker room?
Oh, did I ever? Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is a great story.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Yeah, with your background in football, both at the highest level of college and professional NFL football, what are the biggest changes in the technology that in football today that just amaze you from 25 or so years ago when you were playing?
Well, I think my own feeling is as a fan now, the technologies that allow one to just follow the action, just incredible. So basically, flat screen TVs, high resolution. You go back into when we played; it's just night and day. It actually makes a huge difference in sports like hockey. You know, where guys like me are trying to follow the puck. And so the second aspect of that is annotation technologies. I mean, when you think about the boxes on the strike zone on baseball to see the balls and strikes. I mean, for a fan, that's great. Stan Hovey is the guy that invented the first down marker, you know, that's on the TV. He's the head of IT for the America's Cup. So I've gotten to know Stan a little bit. And kind of going through the history of how that evolved. It's really fantastic for the fan. And lastly, looking at the game films, now all of that is just so digitized, easy, malleable. I mean, we had the old 16 millimeter films that they remember they had to they had to splice them and things like that. It's like, oh my gosh, talk about a better. It would have been great for someone like me that really kind of relied on film study and quantitation and things like that to rely on averages, because every team really does have tendencies. That would have been quite nice. I might be still playing today if I was able.
Oh.
No kidding.
How many coaches did you have that when they were, let's say they were running the film and the film got caught up or the film snapped or something, were just having heart attacks in the back of the room?
Oh yeah, you had to have the, you know, trying to get the fat fingers of the coaches there to get the tape, the film on. So you and I know what that was all about. Yeah.
But was there an intern or an equipment guy that was responsible for running the projector or something?
No, it was all the coaches. It was us. Yeah, it was player and coach.
What about from the player's perspective as far as like training techniques and how they're scrutinized? I know I did a few pieces from the NFL Combine where everything from how much these guys sleep to how many calories they take each day or how many steps they take each day are monitored. Does that just amaze you now?
Yeah, it does. I think in general, the move from pure strength training, which is what we guys try to 2 feet on the ground, as much as you can bench press, now it's functional. A lot of one-legged, a lot of stretching, exercise. So functional exercise finally has made it to the major sports, which is fantastic. And I think that people are generally, I think it's just a prelude. If you look at sensor technology out there and the ability of sensors to capture everything. So that was really pioneered by firms like Athletes Performance and Nike Spark Training. I mean, it's great for the pros. One is just mesmerized by it, how it has actually worked its way college and even into high school and even little kids now who are doing these kinds of training regimens, which the only concern I have there is that people tend to really focus on one sport. Whereas before, you and I were growing up, it was three sports and do this and that, and you're always doing something different. And they don't do that as much anymore. And that's a concern, actually.
So you're more of a proponent of at least maybe until a certain age, play numerous sports. And then what age or when would you say if a person really shows an aptitude or a talent in one particular sport, when would they switch over to just maybe concentrating on that one sport?
Yeah, I personally would like to see until they get into past middle school, 12, 13, I think is, to me, for injury, this is what happens when you focus on one sport. You train in one way year-round, and so you're more prone to injury. So it's not just kind of the halcyon sort of Pollyanna sort of feeling. There's a physical component to it. I realize the difficulty now is travel teams and everything else. Your kids.
Sports are 12 months now.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. And that's just I don't know if there's a solution to it, but it definitely is a problem because injury rates among younger athletes is skyrocketing.
I've never thought of it from that perspective, but I think you're probably right. As a doctor, I know you've been at the forefront and really involved in studying the concussion problem that's been in the NFL and been such an important issue over the last few years. What do you feel about what the NFL is currently doing with the concussions and the procedures they've put in place, and why weren't we really concerned about that before?
Two great comment and then a question. The NFL, I think, is recognizing a leadership role. It's not just an NFL issue. It's NCAA. It's high school, but they're the big dog, and I think that they're having participated in some of the head, neck, and spine committee meetings. They're definitely not the same. It's not the old days are gone. So now, where it's going to end up, the research cycles take a long, long time to actually kind of move the needle, but at least the attention is there. The research is now being done. The question you have is like, why weren't we doing it 30 years ago? I've thought about that a lot. I mean, having been in medical school, I'd race over from doing a cranial nerve exam to University of Kentucky. I'd run over and then 5 minutes later, I'd beat my head on some offensive tackle. So I think, any era, you know, you're always looking in hindsight as 2020. I mean, we knew about pugilistic dementia, punch drunk boxers, you know, the cognitive problems they had. We've known about them for 100 years. And here you had athletes where the helmet was developed, really the face mask is probably the key, in the late 60s or mid 60s. And it's really only, I mean, I kind of think back, face mask had only been in existence like 4 or 5 years when I was playing in the early 70s, you know. So it was probably more than that. But really sophisticated, real head trauma only really began fairly recently. And so it definitely has, you know, I mean, it's a different question of why didn't we know until the year 2000 or 2005? And it's just sometimes in life things break, you know, and clearly, you know, primarily, unfortunately, due to the NFL health issues of many players, Mike Webster probably is the guy that broke the story about 10 years ago when he had his issues with CTE. And that's just how life works sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, and as a doctor, just talking about injuries in general that athletes sustain, are they sometimes, in your opinion, rushing back too fast from them before they're able to significantly rehab them correctly and with the proper amount of time? How do you feel about that?
Well, yeah, clearly in the past, players went back into games by standards that would now be judged as way too soon. I think the move to conservatism and of looking at making sure that you cleared with the physicians, and this is the basis of most of the state laws, clearing with a neurologist or medical professional is state of the art. Now, whether that, in retrospect, 30, 40 years from now, will be judged to be sufficient, we really don't know. I mean, it goes to the issue of subconcussive trauma, right? You've heard that term a little bit, or at least I've heard it. It's like, and so that's a theory. We have no really idea whether subconcussive trauma can have the same effect. Those studies need to be done. And okay, now we're doing them. But as you know, with a clinical study, that we're looking at early life trauma and late stage neurodegeneration or cognitive issue, that takes 30 years to do. So that's, to me, a fascinating question. What are we going to do in the next 30 years while we're doing these studies? Yeah. I think we do the best we can. We use the best technology we can and be conservative and educate ourselves. And then at some point, everyone's got to make their own decision what they want to do.
As somebody who's played the game and then became a doctor and has studied it, in just in your honest opinion, are you surprised? I know we had is it the last death? Was it Corey Stringer that died during training camp? Are you surprised that we haven't had a fatality or even a more serious injury on the field of play in an NFL game? The way they're hitting?
I will say I think the reason that is that by the time you get into the pros, mm-hmm. probably some version of natural selection, but the guys are so good at positioning themselves and not – getting out of position. I mean, a broken neck is a mistake, and to get into the pros, one would posit that your techniques have to be so good on average and over time that the odds of you getting into that mistaken position are very low. I mean, that's not to say, you know, I'm just, because it has happened with pro players, but that could be a reason why it seems to be very, very rare. And the younger you go, the more prevalent it is. And it's probably because of just learning the game over time.
Yeah, I mean, unless you stand next to some of those guys, you don't realize, one, how big they are, and two, just how great of athletes they are.
Yeah, it's definitely amazing. Once a year I'll go down onto the field, and every time I say, I can't believe I played that game. I know I had to have, but it's just to see these athletes is just really pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Great information. I like to wrap up by asking each and every one of my guests, maybe the one piece of technology that you feel you can't live without in your professional or personal life, just maybe one or two devices.
Well, I'll pick one for sure because I was without it yesterday, and I thought I was going to die, and that was my iPhone 4S I went to upgrade it, and it had a SIM card issue, so I had to wait a day to get that fixed. And I thought I was going to die. So, I mean, because literally mobile phones are essentially high-powered computers, right? I mean, that sure. What we would call a computer. I mean, it's just like a laptop. It's everything you need. It's a locator. It's amazing, amazing tool. And companion, almost, you know. So, so that would be my vote.
Yeah, that must have killed you, because all the interaction I've had with those crowd optic guys is they live
exactly.
on their cell phones. They
exactly.
probably thought you had fallen into a manhole or something.
There was a panic. They thought I died. Swear to God.
And
call
John,
out the army.
John probably was ready to call out the National Guard probably.
John, well, he was either that or. Or no, he wouldn't have fired me, I don't think. But it was definitely it was humorous almost in retrospect as to people assume that the technology is there. They assume if sure. I'm not answering calls, it's me. It can't be the phone, right?
As long as you would have had your cell phone back by 3 a.m, so John could have emailed you at 3 a.m.
At 3 a.m.
Like he does to me all the time.
Like he always does. That's right. Unfortunately, I had to wait until the Apple Store opened this morning, so I got it fixed.
Well, the nice thing about the Apple Store is they always open. So
that's right.
They're not going anywhere.
No, they're not.
nobody's buying them out, I don't think.
That's right.
Jim, I appreciate you coming on. That was a great amount of information. And just give one more time the contact information and the CrowdOptic website information.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was great talking to you. That's CrowdOptic. www.crowdoptic.com.
That was great, Jim. I really appreciate it, and hope to talk to you soon again sometime.
Talk to you soon, Rick. Take care.
Sure. Bye. And that's going to wrap us up for this evening. Netcast Studio has many other shows which might be of interest to you, and you can head over to netcaststudio.com to check out the variety of content available. This is it for us for tonight. Waves of Tech will be coming up in a little bit. You've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast on Netcast Studio Production.